It is our joy to present to you a conference in the third series of retreat conferences given by Father John A. Hardin, S.J. Father Hardin is a professor of theology and is well known as an author, lecturer, and retreat master. In these conferences, Father treats of many topics of present-day interest to any Catholic and to anyone. They will prove to be of assistance to everyone sincerely trying to live a Christian life in today's world, whether he be layman, religious, or priest. In the following conference, Father Hardin speaks on the subject, Compassion and Generosity, the Happiness of Giving and Forgiving. Father Hardin.
The title for the present conference is Compassion and Generosity. We have seen briefly that Christ's first formula for happiness is synthesized in the Beatitudes. He promises us joy already in this life, provided we are willing to carry the cross. Just to recapitulate, joy then is quite compatible with suffering. Indeed, it is the effect of patience. It is also God's reward in this life and surely in the life to come for the practice of virtue. God then rewards us, but with a joy that only He can give, but what is most important, only on His conditions. Poverty, sorrow over sin, sacrifice of our desires, and the endurance of opposition brings real peace and joy, as contradictory as those two experiences they seem to be. But there is another source of happiness which Christ promises. It reads, Be compassionate as your Father is compassionate. Do not judge, and you will not be judged. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. Grant pardon, and you will be pardoned. Give, and there will be gifts for you, a full measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over, will be poured into your lap. Because the amount you measure out is the amount you will be given back, unquote, Jesus. Now some meditative reflection. As we look back over what Christ just told us, we find that He tells us to do five things for others. To be compassionate, not to judge, not to condemn, to grant pardon, and to give. Then, since Christ is mathematical, we should be, He attaches a promise to four of these commands. And He lays down three principles. Here are the principles, because this is what we're going to try to unravel. First, we are to be compassionate as God is compassionate. God is our norm. Second principle, if we do not, that is, judge or condemn, then we shall not be judged or condemned, the implication being that we have a lot to be judged for and condemned about. Again, if I'm analyzing principles, is one of those many hypotheses in the New Testament. If we grant pardon, and if we give, you see how the five became three, then we shall receive pardon and gifts. Christ's third principle. There is, he tells us, a proportion. If there was ever a mystery of the faith, this is it. God, the infinite maker of heaven and earth, tells us he will be proportionately, as all that we've said, he promised to be, provided we are. There is, if you wish, a double proportion. We towards others, God towards us, which is already a big mystery. But more mysterious still is that the degree, the extent of our, well, judgment or condemnation in one case, or generosity in the other, will be his measure of not condemning and not judging, or of being generous towards us. To grasp these three principles, especially the last one, is to come to grips with the essence of our faith. So, each principle deserves to be further meditated on. First, we talk about compassion. We are told then to be as compassionate as God is. What does compassion mean? As you notice, I have learned to take nothing for granted, least of all the vocabulary I use. We've got to ask ourselves, what all the labels that we use, that's what words are, so that we don't stick them on to the wrong bottle. Others give us the labels. We've got the ideas. Make sure we put the right label on the right container. What's this compassion? Clearly, it means somehow suffering with. Passion having to do with suffering, and the prefix with. Well, with what? Well, with another person. But also with something else. With more than sympathy, more than pity. I can pity an animal, and I can't be sympathetic with another person's trials or problems. I define compassion as the positive desire to participate or share in what another person or other people are suffering. It's a desire. It may be that I cannot enter into and I cannot share. It's a positive desire, not just a passing, casual sentiment. And what do I desire? I want to, as far as in me lies, now the as far as in me lies will determine how much and how I will show my compassion. But the desire is there to what? to participate in or share in. But let's recall what we said, or better, what Christ told us. We are to be compassionate as God. He is compassionate. God's compassion lies behind the incarnation. It's because he wanted to participate in what we experience as human beings, that though he might, for example, have redeemed the world without becoming like us. Correct? He became man in order to share in our human nature, to make it possible for him to suffer. Talk about divine compassion. That's why God took on human flesh. Because God is God, could not suffer, though he surely knew about it before he became man. But he learned a lot more about it once he became man, of course, as man. He wanted then to partake of our human lot. Love seeks assimilation. We ask next, if this is what compassion means, then what kind of suffering do people have? All kinds. Physical suffering in their bodily external senses. Emotional suffering in their feelings. Social suffering. I hope you've heard about this before. This is a grievous suffering which so many of your fellow religious are suffering grievously. The soul desires acceptance. We instinctively dread rejection. There are a lot of people who are not accepted by those they love. That's what makes it hard. And the very prospect of rejection can make people do the most unexpected things. We want to be accepted. We don't want to be ostracized. Spiritual suffering. Our spirit wants to possess God and wants to experience the possession. And, according to the language which the great friends of God tell us about this, though somehow in their faith they believed, they had God and were united with him, but they didn't experience it. And the spiritual suffering of just believing blindly that you're doing God's will, but seeming to get no response from him in return, can be dreadful. This is social suffering of the highest kind, feeling rejected or not being accepted by the one whom the soul most wants. All of this is suffering. Now the question. We said this is a positive desire, meaning therefore that our compassion is genuine if we sincerely want to do something to alleviate the suffering. We want to. And we want to do something. That's the difference between pity and compassion. Pity is a passing sentiment. Compassion does something to somehow alleviate, if not remove, the suffering. In many cases, our words are the most important. What we say. And let's be practical. This refers to our fellow religious, to those we labor for. As you see, I am touching on something which I closed our last meditation with. This especially means obtaining graces for those who suffer by our prayer and sacrifice. Compassion wants to do something. And surely, there is nothing more we can do for those who are suffering than to obtain graces for them, so that the God whom we invoke will alleviate their suffering. Secondly, we are told by Christ that we are not to judge or condemn. Let's first note the difference, which we touched on earlier, but I want to clarify more. The difference between recognizing a wrong action and condemning the person who does the action. As far as I can tell, what I see or what I hear about is wrong. But going from that to condemning the person is to enter into the human heart, which only God can read. It is best shown, I think, this not condemning others, if we do not consider someone whom we see someone doing what we consider wrong as therefore less in our eyes. If you please, we see ourselves as worse, and we actually take the occasion of another person's wrongdoing to demean ourselves. Now, sisters, this is no kindergarten virtue. That I take the occasion of another person's wrongdoing to say to myself, for example, well, I don't know why she did it or he did it, but knowing myself, if I were exposed to the same temptation, I don't know what I would do, but it would be worse. Or seeing somebody doing wrong action, it should trigger my memory. Lord, I see her doing that. But think of all the bad that's which I have done. Thirdly, we are told that if we grant pardon, we shall be pardoned. Pardoning others means that they have offended us. So that, sisters, without provoking people to offend you, I don't know quite how to put it without being misunderstood. If of an evening you retire without recalling that somehow somebody offended you, well, I suppose you should be sad. I mean, sorrowful. Because if nobody offends you, you've got nobody to pardon. She might almost, you know, put a little badge on you. Please offend me. Now, this business of pardoning people, their offenses, as you know, means not so much that they intended to offend us. This may be real or apparent offense, no matter. The point is, we're offended. We show genuine pardon, especially in our attitude after the person has offended us. If we love him or her as much or even more, then we're moving. We're on the escalator. Christ tells us to give, and that we shall be given proportionately in return. What does it mean to give? Well, clearly, I don't really give anyone anything unless the person somehow profits from what I give.
Please turn over to side B and push the play button immediately without rewinding the tape.